Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Cap Radio has learned that the shooting suspect in the death of Sacramento police officer Tara O'Sullivan has been taken to the hospital. He suffered some kind of injury in the Sacramento County Jail. My colleague Nick Miller is with me with a few more details of the situation. Nick?
On Sunday morning, he's been under 24/7 observation at the downtown jail. And on Sunday morning, they observed Ramos slamming his head against a bed frame inside his cell. He was immediately removed and restrained, but the injuries were such that he was taken to a nearby hospital for treatment. I'm told by the sheriff's spokesperson he's now returned to the jail. He's on the psych floor. He's had no inmate contact and still hasn't. And there's no information that he won't be arraigned this afternoon, which is my assumption that he will be is scheduled to be arraigned still at 1:30.
In fact, the DA's office this morning said at this point they are still expecting him to appear in court. All right, Nick, we'll continue to follow that. Any updates will be at capradio.org. Standing by now on the phone is Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn. And Chief, thanks for making time today.
Thank you for having me.
Do you know any more about the situation we just described with the suspect?
No, that people with the information on that would be the Sheriff's Department.
Okay, you covered a lot of detail in the press conference Friday night, some of which our audience might not have heard. But at this point, I want to traverse the work that was done over the weekend and ask you if there's anything new in the investigation that you can share today.
No, not much more than what was released at the press conference. As you might guess, it's painstaking work on a scene like that that is just complete chaos. And so as the crime scene investigators gather evidence, it takes a really long time. So they'll still be out there probably the rest of this week.
It might be helpful for us to listen to a short clip from that press conference in which you talk about this situation with the suspect and what the officers were facing. So if you bear with me just for about 45 seconds.
It is clear by the suspect's action that he was intent on murdering additional officers and was taking action to do just that, repeatedly shooting at officers throughout much of this incident. We now know that he had multiple weapons in multiple buildings on the property, both handgun and rifles, along with numerous rounds of ammunition. Due to the fact that the officers believed they were being shot at with a high-powered rifle, they had officers retrieve our armored vehicle. I truly believe if officers utilized the equipment they had at the time, prior to retrieving the armored vehicle, we would have additional officers murdered on that day.
Is there any more at this point to add to that scenario, Chief?
No, I just can't reiterate enough what the officers were up against that day, with somebody shooting at them from basically a hidden position. Every time they moved, they were shot at. He shot at the armored cars. He shot at every officer he saw, and did that for over 4 hours straight. So it was a horrific scene, and under the most trying circumstances. I mean, I've been doing this for 32 years and have been involved in many incidents, and I've never seen one like this.
Again, just to lay out a few details, there was the lead officer, and we saw a clip from his body cam, which you released publicly Friday night. Behind him, Officer Tara O'Sullivan and three more officers. As they entered this kind of shed area in the back, where was the suspect shooting from, and did they see him at any point?
No. He was behind them in the house. So that's why I say they were ambushed. They had been there for a while, and he chose that moment to shoot at them. So he shot from behind them and ambushed them.
I would again like you to summarize the gap of time between when Officer Tara O'Sullivan fell down into the yard and she was able to be retrieved. You did go into detail Friday night about how an armored vehicle, the Bearcat as it's called, was needed to be used. But again, if you can lay out that scenario, I think it's important for everybody to understand.
Yeah, I think it's also important to understand that nobody is beating themselves up more than the officers that were on scene and questioning, you know, whether they could have done more. But the reality is, because he was firing at them with a rifle, the equipment that officers walk around with every day, even though it's a lot more equipment than officers had when I came on, things like their bulletproof vest, which we had when I came on, but all officers have ballistic shields in their cars now, and a lot of our cars now have ballistic doors, but none of that equipment stops rifle rounds. So had they gone in that yard, like I've heard some suggest, either with cover fire or utilizing a car or utilizing those shields, none of that stops rifle rounds. They'd be dead right now. And so they called for an armored car and did not wait for SWAT. Patrol officers went and got the armored car because that's the only piece of equipment that we have that stops the kind of firepower that the suspect was firing from largely an unknown position. I mean, they know he was in the house, but you can't see through walls to see where he's at in the house.
Among the charges against the suspect is an attempted murder charge against who I guess would be the training officer, the lead officer. And it appears in the body cam video that he might have been hit in some of the firing. Can you tell me what injuries or what hits he sustained in the course of what happened on Wednesday?
No, he was not hit, nor was anybody else. And that's, one, that's a miracle. If you see that scene and some of the evidence that CSI is collecting, it's a miracle that nobody else was injured, but it's also because of the actions the officers took and the decisions that they made that we don't have not only officers injured, but community people. I mean, high-powered rifles go through everything, go through walls, go through wood, and so that whole neighborhood was evacuated by those officers. And so it's truly a miracle that nobody else was hurt.
So the Bearcat is brought in through two back fences and a pole from an alleyway to help rescue or to rescue Officer O'Sullivan. At one point, the Bearcat was disabled. That's the word that was used in the press conference. And then Officer O'Sullivan's body was moved out and actually hand-carried, as it was described. Can you go through some of the specifics of what happened in that time frame?
No, we're not at liberty to release a lot of that. But I'll say this. The Bearcat was disabled. There was a lot of debris and things in that yard. And so as the Bearcat was trying to leave, it became disabled. And so that's why the rest of the circumstances happened.
And again, to go back to the Friday night press conference, it was recounted that the suspect shot at, these were the times listed, 6:10, 6:11, 6:12, 6:15, 17, 18, 19, 29, 46, 47, 49, and it continued like that for hours. At what point were your negotiators able to start this conversation with him? Had he run out of ammo?
No, he did not run out of ammo. So they tried for over an hour to negotiate with him with no response, no luck. And then a little over an hour after that, they finally were able to talk to him. That went on from probably around shortly before 10 o'clock until the time he came out just before 2 a.m. in the morning. So the negotiators talked to him for hours before he eventually came out peacefully and was taken into custody.
Another question I've heard is why there was no tear gas, why no grenades were thrown into the house.
Well, that's always an option that the incident commanders have. But again, you have to ask yourself, somebody shooting at you with a high-powered rifle, and you have to consider the consequences of any action such as shooting tear gas in there, what would come next. So those are all decisions people have to make at that moment.
Was this Bearcat, by the way, one of those secured through the Department of Defense auction that
No.
happened a number of years ago?
No.
It was not. I want to talk a bit about the rest of the department, about your force coming back to work after this day. It's been announced that funeral services will happen on Thursday. What's the job of continuing to do this investigation, but continuing to deal with the impact of what's just happened within the department?
Well, I appreciate the question because, you know, a lot of times some people just move on the next day, or some people are still impacted by it, even if they're not in the police department, but they go back to their jobs that don't deal with things like this. The officers in this department had to go back to roll call the next day and could have gone on a call very similar like this. Surely did, because we get a lot of domestic dispute type calls. And so they had, with all these feelings and emotions, had to go back to work and serve this community. And they did just that. But make no mistake, there's people struggling. And we're supporting the family, who's really, as you might imagine, if any of us had this happen in our families, how we would feel. But they're an amazingly strong family, and they're actually concerned about us when they lost their daughter and their sister. So it's tough, but as a police department, the folks that work here are really strong, and we will help them get through it, and we'll continue to serve our community.
Chief, we just have a few seconds left, but you said that Officer O'Sullivan is someone you knew even before she became an officer. We don't have time for all of what you said, but I do want to close this conversation with a few words from you about her.
Yeah, I think you can see her impact still to this day. I met her at my swearing-in ceremony as the first time, and then knew her for several months before we actually hired her. Always somebody that's willing to help, always smiling. I got text messages from community members about things they saw her do in the community. Just the other day, we had a hiring workshop, and it was the largest attended hiring workshop with not a seat empty that we've ever had. And I think that's Tara's continued watching over us and helping this community just like she did over the last year.
Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn. Chief, thanks so much for making time. I always appreciate that you make yourself available to us.
You're welcome.
And there is ongoing coverage of the story at capradio.org. After our break, we're going to continue with an encore presentation of Insight with music from a number of bands you've heard here on the show. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.